TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Salmon and Sovereignty. Kalin Sisk, chief of the Winemem Wintu, speaks on ceremony, broken treaties, corporate theft, and the relationship between salmon and water. In the summer of 2012, neighbors of mine returned from the banks of the McLeod River at the north end of Lake Shasta, California. They had helped protect the coming-of-age ceremony for young women of the Winemem Wintu tribe. Even though the McLeod is the ancestral home of the Wintu, access to ceremonial sites and sacred places has been restricted by the Forest Service. The Forest Service chose to protect the rights of the speedboats, jet skis, and hikers that are now using the impounded rivers that have been backflooded by the Shasta Reservoir. The stories were shocking. The ceremony had been disrupted on purpose by drunken speedboat drivers, a fisherman who threatened to use his gun, a woman who bared her breasts, and even by agents of the Forest Service who threatened to arrest the Winemem Wintu instead of keeping the speeding boaters away. None of the newcomers stopped to reflect on the terrible irony that deep below the surface of that water lay the homes, gardens, farms, and graveyard of the Winemem Wintu. They had been evicted when Lake Shasta was filled in 1945. In 1941, Winemem Wintu land had been taken under three provisions. The Wintu were to receive like land to that they had lost, a cemetery to rebury their dead, and money to rebuild. By 2014, none of the promises had been fulfilled. And worse, in 1986, the Winemem Wintu also were excluded from federal recognition as a bona fide Indian tribe. As the Winemem Wintu began fighting for the compensation of their losses, as well as for federal recognition, a new threat emerged. Plans to raise the Shasta Dam are well underway, and such a dam raise would submerge another 1.5 miles of the McLeod River, including the ceremonial sites that the Wintu have used for thousands of years. Today, the Winemem Wintu are among the strongest opponents of the project to raise the Shasta Dam, and also the strongest supporters of the salmon that used to run so thick in the McLeod, Sacramento, and Pitt Rivers that horses were afraid to wade through the churning waters. There's a deep kinship between the salmon and the Winemem Wintu and the tribe fighting its own extinction, nevertheless is making every effort to bring the salmon back from its extinction. And in the course of that battle, the Winemem Wintu are taking on the most powerful institutions of the day, from the corporations that buy and control water, the agribusinesses that bribe politicians for access to water, the oil companies, and the current state agencies and governments that want to dramatically increase the water transfer from Northern California to the deserts of the South. And they're planning to do it by building the Delta Twin Tunnels. The current 2013-2014 drought is being used to sell the project to the public, who will have to pay for it. However, that water is already earmarked for agribusiness and for the oil companies that will use it for fracking. I met and recorded Kalin Sisk, the chief of the Winemem Wintu, on April 19, 2014, at a meeting on salmon and sovereignty. Indigenous perspectives on water and cultural survival in California. I was moved to meet a spiritual leader who's also a political fighter and someone who immerses herself in the complex and sordid story of industrial water diversion and pollution, and someone who maintained her humor in spite of the multi-generational grief, genocide, and injustice that the indigenous peoples of North America continue to endure. He is Colleen Sisk, chief of the Winnemem Wintu.
From my heart to yours, we'll put our heads together and our hearts together, and we'll find a way to change things so that things are good for us. We've been on a long journey. I'm at the end of somebody's seventh generation. When they were looking out for the seven generations down the line, I'm standing at that point of somebody, of my ancestors, my elders, of their seventh generation. For my grams, I was the fifth generation from her in the leadership. And so we look at our world in that way. It's like these guys are starting their life right now as somebody's seventh generation, that they've been born into a time that we don't really know how to maneuver in that time yet. But we know that we have to make each other strong enough, safe enough, and happy enough to continue on in the good way, on a good road. And in my tribe, we are bringing back our full ceremony for our women, the Bothless Chonas. And in the Bothless Chonas, we get our girls ready to come into the womanhood. But this means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. It's not just one thing for women. It's a thing for everyone to have a place and a respect for, not just the woman who's going through her time to come into her womanhood. I don't know how many of you have been keeping up on the water issues in the state or been attending some of the state water meetings up and down the state. And there are a lot of different things that are happening with water. You know, for us, we're the Winnemem Wintu. Winnemem meaning middle water. Wintu means people. So we're the middle water people. And we sing to water. We go to the headwaters at Mount Shasta and we sing to that water that comes all the way down to the delta. You know, when we think about water nowadays, how many rivers can you drink out of? Can you drink out of any of the rivers around here? No. Most people would say we carry our water even when we go backpacking, or we have filter systems that we utilize when we even go backpacking. But before this time, like my grandma's hunting days, and even my hunting days earlier on in the 60s, nobody carried water. We drank out of the springs. You know, there was water all over the mountains, and you didn't have to carry water. But now they say that every river in California is contaminated. And when we say that, nobody is really appalled. You know, nobody is like, what? You gotta be kidding. You know, all of the rivers, are you sure? It's like we are so dumbed down that we just accept it. Like, oh well. It's like, are we oh-welling the very life support that no one can live without? No one can do without? We don't really react. We don't really hold the state accountable for cleaning up that water. Right now, the state is fighting over where to send the water. The contaminated water is being fought over. It just appalls me that we're fighting over where to send the contaminated water, right? Have you heard of the Twin Tunnels? Yeah, the Twin Tunnels, and it affects everybody on the coastline. The Twin Tunnels is these giant tunnels that are going to be big enough to divert the entire Sacramento River. And when they divert the entire Sacramento River, that means right now that there won't be any fresh water going into the Delta. And do you know where the Delta is? It's the Bay Area, right? San Francisco Bay Area, all of that is the Delta. It's like an incubator. It is a nursery. It is a changing of times for salmon and other fish and everything in there. It's a very delicate part of the state, part of the water system. And does anybody know what happens when a delta dies? The whole coastline is going to change. All up and down the coast will change when that delta dies. We have the largest delta on the Western Hemisphere. We have the two longest running rivers that go into that delta, that we had the highest population of salmon, wild Chinook salmon, running in this state, right? By 1945, they're filling Shasta Dam. There's no way for the salmon to get around the dam. And 7 years later, all of the McLeod River salmon are dead. They swim up the river, the farthest on the river chain, to the highest mountain, to the tributaries there. And they are timed to spawn in those locations. And until they can get there, a salmon will do everything that it can to get to its spawning ground, including kill itself. And so hundreds of thousands of salmon died below Shasta Dam, trying to swim up to the tributaries on Mount Shasta. So in 2004, we held a war dance on Shasta Dam because they had talked about raising the Shasta Dam. We wanted to tell the world. We wanted to tell the world what was going on. And after the war dance, we got an email message from New Zealand that said, do you want your salmon back? We have them. And so we took a trip to New Zealand and found out that they have a mountain there. It's a volcanic mountain, and it's called Mount Araki, and it has ice waterfalls. And that ice waterfall comes down and runs into the Rakai River. And the Rakai River is a glacier-run river just like McLeod River is. And the salmon survived. They were there, they're thriving, and we met the Maori people, and they are willing to give us the salmon back. But guess who doesn't want it? The United States. Right? So the Maori people asked us, who represents you in Congress? Who represents you? Because in New Zealand, they have four Maori people that sit in Parliament who represent the indigenous Maori people and their issues with the government. And so I'm thinking, we really don't have any representatives looking out for the interests of the indigenous people of the Americas, right? We don't even have anybody in the state legislature that represents the indigenous California Indians and our interests or our needs. We receive this blanketed law, tribal law, that comes from back east somewhere, and it comes over us like we're all Plains Indians. You know, and we all fit under, you know, the buffalo theory of life. And they rarely include salmon in those kinds of decisions. So I'm saying that California needs to come together, and we need to say we are very unique. Our state is very unique. We have a different form of tribalism here, up and down the state, and that we should be treated separate and different, as is Alaska and Hawaii. You know, Hawaii is not recognized, but they do recognize that Hawaii is different, and California is different. We're one of the few states that the government actually mandated killings of Indians for money. You know, we went under a Holocaust here of deliberate killings. And many of the tribes, you know, suffer from that time. And I say that because, you know, people say, well, get over it. That's a long time ago. You know, we're all Californians now. And don't you want to be American? You know, all of that, right? But I'm saying My grandmother, who was a part of my life, was born in 1888. She was born in 1888 when they were still killing Indians, when they were still hunting the Indians. And so she survived, not because she didn't get shot at, but because she was lucky and made it through that time. And so when they say that's a long time ago, to me it's not. It's like it's one generation from me that they were hunting us. And then my mother's generation, they tried to strip everything from them by sending them to boarding schools. You know, we're Indian enough to go to boarding school, but we're not now. So it's like, maybe you owe us some retribution, you know, you made a mistake. We were not the Indians. And so, you know, they gave payment to the Japanese that went to the concentration camps. It's like, well, probably they owe us because we were not the Indians they were looking for. You know, they made a mistake. We have to come together as California. And under the water politics right now, we have a mandate as Indian people to stand up for the waters. And right now there are Department of Water Resources are meeting all over the state to convince people about drinking water and the need for drinking water. The Water Board is meeting all over the state to institute the water bonds for wet water, as they call it, in creating reservoirs for storing water. The Bureau of Reclamation is putting out its meetings for storage, including the Shasta Dam raise. The water districts, who are the corporate mega watermongers, I call them, are the beneficiaries of all of this water projects. They're the ones, I don't know if you've heard of Westlands Water District. Westlands Water District is out of Fresno, California. That's where their headquarters are. But they are a world-renowned water agency, just like Nestle's, is world-renowned. They go to every country. They're mega, deep-pocket people. And then you have the Resniks at Paramount Farms. You have Kern Water Bank, and you have Metropolitan Water, are your big watermongers, who this water plan that Governor Brown has, which I like to refer to as the Brown Water Plan, is one big toilet. It's one big toilet. That's why I look at it. It's like Shasta Dam is the tank, right? And you come down the tank, and you have the estuary as the bowl, and then you have the tunnels that is the exit pipe. And that exit pipe goes down right to Westlands Water District. Westlands Water District takes a certain amount of water and it waters its selenium-driven poison crops, or threatens to. And if the government subsidizes them, then they don't grow anything and they sell their water. And then the rest of the water is designed to go off to two fracking mines. And then five pipes will go off into the desert to create new communities for the 5 million people who are moving to California. It isn't an instance about Southern California uses too much water with their swimming pools and their, you know, golf courses and all of that kind of stuff, as opposed to Northern California. And in fact, Southern California regulates their water a lot better than we do in the North. They have been on a flatline water use, even though they have a higher population than we do, for a long time because of their education issues and that they pay attention to what's going on. And so the public is being confused about where this water is going. And then the other confusing area is that they say the farmers, and I want to separate that, ag business is not farming to me. There are farmers, and I care about the farmers, but I don't think that ag business has any business taking care of our water system. You know, and so ag business is the ones who are saying, well, farmers feed the world, and that little fish is in our way. So it's fish against farmers. And the little fish is the Delta smelt, the biggest little fish in their way. And the ag business has already killed 99% of them there's only 1% of Delta smelt left in the world, and they want to kill the rest of them and get them out of the way. Well, the Delta smelt have a major job with salmon. There's a relationship with salmon that the salmon can't survive without the Delta smelt. So Governor Brown declares the state of emergency, right? We are in a state of emergency for drought. And so he brings President Obama, right? So I send some of my tribal members on that bus to go down there and meet, you know, be there when President Obama gives a speech about the drought. Well, the bus is misled. They can't find where President Obama is going to speak. But President Obama is meeting with mega corporation businesses who are attacking the fish, right? Saying the fish are in our way of farming and we feed the world. And so here we have President Obama standing in Fresno, right? Where we export water to Fresno to grow. So essentially, Fresno is a desert without the export of water, right? It's a desert. And right now that desert is reacting. I think their growing years are over. The selenium is coming up. The more water they put on that, because it is a desert, the more salt comes up and they can't grow, right? It's gone. It's done. Your mine is empty. You can't grow here anymore, right? So there's President Obama standing in the desert saying, yep, for sure, there's a drought, you know, and they're very concerned because, you know, this is where 80% of the almonds and pistachios that feed America come from. And these farms feed the world. And, you know, after looking at some of that stuff, it's like, you know what? Ag business have 8 crops. They have 8 crops that feed the world. One of them is watermelon. I don't know how many people in the world who can survive on watermelon. Or it's good, let me tell you. But isn't there a place that's better to grow watermelons than in the desert? And cotton and pistachio trees that utilize much more water than a desert should be being watered for? And so there he is, standing in the desert, right? Okay, so then he says, we're going to bring $600 million into California to meet the needs of the farmers who are in the drought-stricken area. So a purple line is drawn about the drought-stricken area, which is right around the desert, right? Right around Westlands Water District, Metropolitan, Kern Water Bank, and nothing from Northern California, where the water comes from, right? And so everybody in the state is thinking, yeah, you know, our reservoirs are empty because it hasn't rained. Just no rain here. So people in Sacramento area are looking Folsom Lake, which is at a poor little 16%. And most of the other ones in the north are at 34%. Shasta is at 35% empty. But little do people realize that the paper water contracts pumped all the water down south and filled all the reservoirs. So all of the reservoirs in the south are at least at 98%, 89%, 102% full. And Metropolitan Water District for the south and for the desert area say, we're good until 2016. We have no water problem till then. People don't realize that they drained these lakes. And they're looking at the lake, it's like, yep, sure enough, that's a drought. It's like, you can't tell a drought by a lake. It's a man-made lake. What you have to do is you have to look at the Sierra Mountains. You have to look at Mount Shasta. You have to look at Mount Lassen. And when you can see the stone ridges on those mountains at this time of year, that says we're in drought. Because then you have to look at the high mountain meadows that are going to send that water down, because nothing fills up Lake Shasta except for that mountain in those watersheds. And we're not taking care of any of the high mountain meadows. We're not taking care of anything that are water creators. We're still doing clear-cut logging, which is a drought practice. We still don't have our wolves back. which are the guardians of the meadows that keep the meadows wide and open. And without the wolves, what happens is that the deer and other animals go straight into the meadows and eat the meadow dry without the wolves. If the wolves are there, the deer learn not to go out in the open because they become prime target for a kill. And so the deer and the rabbits and everything eat on the edges of the meadow, keeping it wide and keeping it lush and not trampling into the meadow itself. It also keeps the trees and everything else from encroaching into the meadow, which Forest Service says, that's natural succession. That's real natural. It's like our acorn areas, you know. If we were living in the mountains again, we would be burning under our acorn trees, and the pine trees would not be encroaching on the oak groves like they are. But now, you know, these new scientists, they say that's natural succession. It's like, well, it's not natural when you take us out, when you take the wolves out, when you take the beavers out, then everything gets out of balance. And the beavers are the ones who, in our language, we call them codbesis, which means the sacred center. And wherever the beaver is, they create life because they build ponds. And so there's more birds, there's more animals, there's more everything, there's more fish. When the winters come, that dam breaks and it's let loose, that water is let loose. But it's let loose in different places each time, so that the tributaries that are running into the river are not cutting a ditch down into the ground like they are right now. You go to the high mountain meadows and you'll see ditches that are deeper than me. And then the water runs off like a fire hydrant. It doesn't pan out over the meadows and it doesn't soak into and recharge the water systems, so that it comes down, it trickles down throughout the year. It's all done. You know, by this time, it's all done because there's nothing to hold the water back. Most of us know that there's a finite of water, right? There's like less than 2% of drinkable water in the world. And so we have to look at, can we afford the kind of decisions that are being made for us?
That was Colleen Sisk, chief of the Winnemem Wintu. Come back when TUC Radio returns to hear the second part of her talk on salmon and sovereignty. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Open the newest programs page and scroll down. This program was produced off the grid with solar power. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and free as podcast online. This is an unfunded program that depends entirely on donations by listeners. You can contact TUC Radio online at tucradio.org. The email is tuc@tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.